Hey, it's Sadie Gustafson-Zook, and this is the Dear Valadier podcast. Thank you for tuning in to the third episode of our second season today. I am really excited to share with you my good friend, Andrew Pauls, who is a Lancaster, Pennsylvania-based folk singer-songwriter. Andrew is an on-the-ground kind of guy and is an engaged community member around active transportation projects in his community in Lancaster. He's also a clean water advocate and a grant manager extraordinaire. Me and Andrew had the pleasure of being on tour together in March, and so that is where we had this conversation. So please, without further ado, help me welcome Andrew Pauls. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Sadie.
Thank you for agreeing to be on the Dear Valadier podcast.
Sure. Happy to be here.
We're in Andrew's office and we're on tour. Well, we haven't really started. We're in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where Andrew lives.
We are, yeah.
And I was like, Andrew, shall we record Dear Valadier? And so, anyway, it's funny. I've never recorded. That's not actually true. This is my second Dear Valadier that I recorded in someone else's space.
Nice. So, otherwise, it's been over Zoom.
Over Zoom. I did one last month in a closet. Okay. in an Airbnb closet.
All right.
But I think this sound will be a lot better. So
yeah,
I appreciate you having a good sound set up.
Yeah, no, it's fun to try different things. Yeah.
Nice. For those of you who don't know Andrew or me, we were in college together and mm-hmm. we were in a band, and that's why we're on tour now. Well, it's mm-hmm. not the band. It's Sadie and Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. Just to say, we go way back.
Yeah.
We were housemates at one point.
We were.
In my house, actually, where I live now.
True.
But a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we've known each other since...
It's been 10 years,
2013?
Andrew. I know.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Sheesh.
I feel like not quite old enough to have known people for 10 years, even though I'm like, you know, 10 times 3, basically.
What's that? Do
the math. No. I just mean like, you know, when you're 10, you've known people for 10 years. When you're 20,
right,
you've known people for more than 10 years.
I don't know, but like knowing someone as...
As an adult,
right,
for 10 years.
Yeah. That feels different than like, you know, childhood, whatever.
Yeah. So. Good point. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, super stoked to finish out this tour strong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're one day in, 1 out of 4.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're now on the second day, so.
Yeah, headed to Philly soon, so.
Anyway, this is exciting. Can I ask you some questions that I ask everybody on the podcast?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some identities that are important to you?
Identities? That's a broad question. I guess I identify as someone who is kind, detail-oriented, creative. I identify as male. I'm a musician. I like sounds. I've been lately into field recordings and just how everyday things kind of sound in and out of context. So I identify as a sound, soundophile, or not an audiophile because that's different, but like
sound connoisseur.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I would, any follow-up questions to any of that? Or
yeah,
like
if, I'm wondering in this room, based on your experience, what's like the best sound?
What's the best sound? Well, I got, there's a singing bowl in the corner over there that I got from 10,000 Villages, which is a fair trade organization. I had wanted a singing bowl for a long time. and then I finally, for my birthday, bought myself a singing bowl. Yeah,
nice.
It's just an amazing sound. And we could maybe...
Sure.
Even get it.
Oh, please. That was a leading question for a reason.
Were you hoping for the...
I was not hoping necessarily for the singing bowl, but I just thought that there you would probably have made sounds with a lot of the things in this room.
Yeah, considering that there, for those of you listening, there are guitars on the walls and
I was thinking like tapping on surfaces. Oh,
like things, like non-instrument sounds. Yeah. Anyway, well, here's the singing bowl. I don't know if we maxed things out there, but...
It doesn't look like it.
Oh, perfect. Anyway, well, this is a meditation podcast now, actually.
Yeah, thank you for this moment of mindfulness.
Mindfulness moments.
Mindfulness moments on Dear Dabaladir. Can you tell me a little bit more about when you were a kid? Like, if you had visions of yourself as a grown-up and who that was?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm not certain I had a vision of what I wanted to be. You know, like there are the typical like, do I want to be a firefighter or like things like that. But I don't think I ever like was super like set on one thing that I thought I would be when I grew up. I've always liked music and sounds and making sounds and music. I remember specifically in, I don't know if it was maybe fourth grade, at a parent-teacher conference, one of my teachers said to my parents, like, Andrew's great, really sweet kid, super smart. But he won't stop banging on the desk, like drumming on the desk. And so I think that sort of carries through, today. So yeah, shorter answer of that is I'm not sure if I like necessarily had a vision of who I would be, but I think it's interesting to kind of trace the through line that I've always kind of tapped on things. And
did you ever do the thing with the pen where it's like, do you know what I'm talking about? I feel like when we were like in middle school or something, it was like a big thing, like people holding a pen and like you tap with your like wrist on the like.
Interesting. No, I'm never surprised got into that didn't my make technique, it to you. Yeah. Maybe that was a Midwest thing. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. What was the first song that you wrote, and what was the context for it?
The first song I wrote. It was like E, A, and D chords. And it was, the lyric was something like, old man Jenkins has bit the dust or something like that. It was like a very, it was a song about life not being fair or something. To be honest, I think it was sort of just a bunch of phrases that kind of came to mind strung together, but you know, what is a song but that?
Sure.
But I think it was just like a general sense of, I don't know.
Disparity.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It was, I wasn't like depressed or anything as a, you know, seventh grader or whatever writing that, but it was just sort of a, I think it sort of came out of like, some CCR kind of vibes.
What's CCR?
Creedence Clearwater Revival, like the band, okay. That kind of thing.
Do you feel like you've gotten more specific in your songwriting?
More specific? Yeah. Oh, yes. yeah. Yeah, I mean, my writing is pretty much based on personal experience, or if it's not, it's sort of relating self to another story. And I think I'm a very detail-oriented person in general, so my songwriting tends to reflect that, sometimes to a fault of, like, you know, I want to describe something, so I use lots of words to do so. But yeah, I think my songs are kind of by nature very, you know, place-based or very person-based or, yeah, rarely do I just set out to write a song about, like, a general emotion. It's usually, like, a specific situation that comes to mind, and then figure out how to tie that into a more universal feeling, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah. So today we have a question from somebody who was in a long distance relationship, and I thought of you for this because mm-hmm. when we were in college, like, you've been with your partner since you were in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Our first date was junior prom, and that was, oh boy, 2011 maybe. So yeah, we've been together over 10 years.
And all the time I knew you in college, like, you guys were long distance. Mm-hmm, and right. Also when we were roommates, you were long distance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also when Laura would come to visit, they would stay in my room, my dorm room. Do you remember that?
Oh, right. Yeah. Forgot about that.
They're a very good guest. Left almonds.
Oh, yeah.
A sweet note and a bag of almonds.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that you would have some pretty good intel probably for this scenario.
Sure.
So.
Sure, let's hear the question.
Okay. Okay, so normally we listen to the song and do the question, but this is a pretty good lead into the question. So I'll just read the question and then we'll listen to your song afterwards.
Great. Yeah.
Dear Balladeer, I have a question about long distance. My partner and I have been happily together for 3 years, but we only have been in the same place for the first 6 months of our relationship. When we met, they were just finishing grad school and now have been in their residency in another state for the past 2.5 years. I'm really excited to be with them, but there's always a looming presence of a question mark. Will we ever be able to build a future in the same place? I've read that living separate lives can be a healthy aspect of long-distance relationships, leading to less codependency, but sometimes it feels like I'm not in a relationship at all because our lives are so separate. We try to visit each other's cities every few months, and those times are really special, if not a bit stressful, because we're trying to cherish all of our time together and things never go exactly as planned. I guess my question is, how do I know if we are building towards something that will eventually be able to be a shared life?
Close to you. Can Count the miles till I get to you. Oh, count up the miles till I get to you. I'll wear out my walking shoes. Can I be close to you? Rain falls down on the old tin roof. Oh, ain't it a shame when the rain falls through? My socks are wet in my walking shoes. Can I be close to you? Watch the sky turn gray to blue. Big old sun is shining back on through. I'll put on my walking shoes. Can I be close to you? I don't care where we may be, and I don't care if we have any money. All I want is just you and me. Can I be close to you? Look at our love and how it grew. Look at our love and how it grew. I'll take off my walking shoes. Can I be close to you? Back in the arms of my lover true. I'm back in the arms of my lover true. I'll take off my walking shoes. Can I be close to you? Nothing but a smile when I'm with you. Big old sun is smiling too. I'll take off my walking shoes. Can I be close to you? Nothing but a smile when I'm with you. Big old sun is shining right on through. I'll throw away these walking shoes. Can I be close to you? Evening breeze is coming through. Evening breeze is coming through. I don't need my walking shoes when I am close to you.
Okay. So, Andrew, thoughts on this question and or the song? I think whatever you want in terms of just sharing from your personal experience that has informed the song, mm-hmm. or also speaking specifically to the song, whatever feels cool.
Yeah. So the song is, you know, it comes from personal experience, but it also has some allegory in it, obviously. Sort of thinking about the times when Laura and I would, you know, be home. So we were doing long distance because of college. Laura was going to school on the East Coast. I was going to school in Northern Indiana with Sadie, as we mentioned. And so it was always, as the person who submitted the question said, it's always a mixed bag of emotions. When you come back together, of course it's joyful, but then there's a sense that, you know, you're gonna have to say goodbye again. And, you know, for us it was always like tough, kind of long and drawn out.
The goodbyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I guess what I was trying to get at with this song, if I remember right, I wrote it during the summer, one of the times, like in between junior and senior year of college, or sophomore and junior, one of those two. And sort of anticipating, like, hey, I'm gonna have to leave again. And I was kind of the one doing the leaving because Laura was going to school closer to where we had both lived and grown up. So I wasn't obviously literally walking to school, but it sort of, I was at that point kind of obsessed with the whole, you know, hobo imagery and like hopping trains and that sort of thing. Not something I ever did, but just, you know, that classic Americana kind of Depression era vibe. And so I think this was a way of kind of applying that lens to my situation as allegory, as a way of like kind of analyzing it and thinking about it in a different way. And you know, the song, like the song, I'll admit it kind of like romanticizes it to some extent, of like the whole wandering and coming back home kind of thing. When it, you know, isn't always so fun or I don't know. It doesn't always have like that romantic feel to it. A lot of times it just feels like drudgery. Yeah, but just this idea of like the shoes being a symbol of, all right, it's time to put on those shoes again and you know, start, go back to being separate. And then, you know, if you hang up your hat and take off your shoes for a bit, that's kind of a symbol of coming home. And you know, when, if anybody has ever done either a school situation or another situation where you're, you have kind of, you're split between two homes, regardless of a romantic situation, like that's, it was hard for me, because it's like you get all your stuff out to school or wherever you're staying, but then you come back for breaks, and then like some of your stuff is in one place, some of your stuff is another place. And this concept of like, same thing with like your soul or your being is kind of split between two places, especially when with long distance relationships, it's like you have obviously that person who's important, who's in another place, but you also hopefully have people who are important to you in the other place. So it sort of like can pull you two different directions. Those relationships like play different roles, but it can be hard to like remain present in one place or the other.
And you were like living in Goshen during the school year and then living in Lancaster in the summers and all the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
So it really was going back and forth. It wasn't like going to college, being like, okay, now I live here for these 4 years.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of, yeah, it's a strange time, because it's like, are you, what actually is your home base kind of thing?
And like, you're also getting to decide that, but if the factor is like, well, yeah, but the person who I'm trying to build a life with is somewhere else.
Right. That's definitely a rooted thing. And part of why Laura and I came back to Lancaster after school, because it was that common place, that shared place. Had Laura and I not been together, or had Laura and I both been in a place other than Lancaster, you know, we might live somewhere else too. But I think place and relationship can be connected pretty closely a lot of the time, whether that's romantic relationships or otherwise.
I didn't necessarily think that this conversation would go place-based, but that does make sense, that it's like that your mentality is split between two places.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that it's a person, but it's like a place that you know really well and that is also home for you.
Mm-hmm. And people make the place, I think. Like, I went back to Goshen, Indiana, where I went to school, and like all my friends were gone, and it felt like a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the same cafe, brewery, like that was all the same, but like it just didn't feel like home in the same way it had after 4 years living there with a cohort of friends and you know, professors and whatnot. It just felt strange. Yeah, so this is a little bit of a maybe sidetrack, but but I think it's all kind of tangled together.
Yeah. Would you have any advice for this person who's in this situation? Like, Yeah, I don't know anything specific. I can also read parts of it again if you want.
Yeah, well, I guess one thing that I struggled with is I'm someone who I really value being present in a particular place and situation. Like wherever I am, that's where I want to show up and be fully. But that becomes difficult if you have someone who's very important to you in another place. So it was hard for me to, and this is going to sound bad, but like it wasn't my first, it was hard for me to like remember to stay in touch with people who are like in a different context sometimes.
I think that's pretty normal.
People who aren't right in front of me. Yeah. But I mean, it becomes a problem, of course, when that's your significant other.
Sure.
And so that was definitely a point of like a tough thing for me. I mean, but one thing we did is we kind of had regular, Laura and I had regular FaceTime or Zoom. Well, it wasn't Zoom then, but it was, yeah, FaceTime, I guess. And, sort of, I don't know, not scheduled too much, but scheduled enough.
Like found something that worked for you guys.
Right. Yeah. It had regular, you just plan on connecting at a certain time all the time, I guess, like on a weekly basis or every other day or every day or whatever.
Right.
Makes sense.
I guess this is kind of a different situation than yours because you seem like you were pretty clear that you were like on a trajectory together. And that it was like, you will end up in the same place. Like you were like, we were together before, we're gone now, and we will be together again. Was there ever times in there where you were like, is this happening? Like, is this real? Like, are we building the same thing?
I think we were usually on the same track of what we wanted, that we wanted to be back together. I think in sort of towards the end of high school, we kind of had to make a decision about whether we stayed together with long distance. And I think it was like neither of us really saw a reason to like to not try it. And so we tried it and sort of muddled through it and figured out ways to make it work. But yeah, it might be a different situation in that, and you know, this person's situation also has an end date, but Laura and I like had a definite end date of when we would, you know, graduate from college. And also like set up touch points, like I said, like summers and Christmas and, or yeah, winter break, that there were always these, we knew that there would be these time spans where we would be together, I guess, that it was kind of planned out. Whereas, you know, if we were in that situation now and like not in school, but kind of just like working our jobs or doing, it wouldn't be, the structure wouldn't be built in, I guess. So it would almost be like you'd have to plan it more of like once a month we're gonna meet up. I don't know. And it doesn't sound like super spontaneous or romantic to do that, but like a lot of romantic relationships is honestly just like admin and maintenance. Like, yeah, you kind of, at least the way Laura and I function, we're very calendar driven lives. That's partially how we communicate. And yeah, so like being, it might sound kind of cold, but at the same point, like it just having those things scheduled out is, then you don't have to like think about when are we going to see each other again. Right. It's just like you, it's like, okay, we know every Thursday we're gonna have a phone call at 9 o'clock or whatever. Yeah. And then like every, the first Friday of every month, we're gonna, like one of us is gonna drive to the other city or take the train or whatever. And spend the weekend together. I guess a thought that comes to mind too is I think they asked something like how, like, the stress of trying to make the best of, or like the most of a situation mm-hmm. when you are together. I guess if I were to offer advice on that, I would say do things, like, don't feel too much pressure to, like, do things. I feel like the things that I've found most valuable with friends or with significant other, with Laura, are things like going grocery shopping or...
Or just, like, sharing a life, like, doing life
things. Right, right, yeah. Like, not... You don't have to go to the zoo every time or whatever you want to do. Just like keeping it simple and not being, I don't know, even if it's like, I'm just sort of envisioning what that would look like. You go to the other person's city and it's like you still have to, even if you're sitting at the kitchen table together, both answering emails, like that's still, if that's all you're doing, that's maybe like not the best, but like, if that's an hour or a couple hours of your time, like, that's not the end of the world either. Like, I think that's, and you can kind of make eyes at each other over over your laptops, but I don't know. I think there's something to be said for just inhabiting the same space and not putting too much pressure or expectations on it. Or, you know, if you have expectations, it's important to let the other person know, because one person might be like, I'm expecting to do just like answer emails next to each other versus like one person wants to go to the zoo, right? So
very different activity.
So I think taking some of the stress out of it would be like, hey, like, honestly, I just this weekend just want to sit down and like read a book near you. That's kind of what I want to do versus let's go out dancing, or, you know, I think just mm-hmm. the communication is key. And I think that is just like the advice for all of life, all the time. Communication is key.
And I guess that it probably is good training to be long distance if you are doing it. Well, you're at least getting practice in communication when you have to like be so intentional about everything.
Yeah. I think long distance relationships are, It is a really good, shall we say, crucible. Like, do you know what I mean? If you can do long distance for like a decent amount of time, chances are you can probably do almost anything that the universe throws at your relationship, right? So if it ends up that, you know, your relationship has a meltdown because of the long distance relationship, maybe it's not because of the long distance relationship. It might be, I don't know. Yeah, and I only have the context of it working out for me. Sure. So, and it's not for everybody. But at the same point, if you're like both willing to try it and you're both communicative about it, and it's, I don't know, I kind of don't like the phrase meant to be, because it implies that it's just like works, but like I said, relationships take maintenance, and I think long distance relationships are like the heaviest crash course in relationship maintenance that you could ever take. And I think something that they said in their question about codependency and how long distance relationships can help you not be that way. I sort of look at, especially in the context of undergrad, when there were some folks who came in together, coupled, and that had a high failure rate, if mm-hmm. I remember correctly. And I don't know how that compares to the general population of people in relationships at mm-hmm. that age. Maybe that just is a high failure rate in general. Or not failure rate, maybe. That's not a great term. They broke up. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's... A breakup is not necessarily a failure. No, yeah. No. It's sometimes it's the best transition you can make. But where was I going with this?
We're talking about codependency.
Right. Yeah. But I will say, yeah, the people who came into college that I observed that were coupled, or even people who coupled in college, sometimes didn't really branch out beyond that couple, which I think is a real disservice. And I think it's something that our society places on romantic relationships, placing them on this pedestal that they offer everything you could ever need, that they're sort of a miracle drug for curing loneliness or whatever. But like, you can have a great romantic relationship and still not have all your relational needs met. I think, and Laura and I have talked about this a decent amount, that like, we can't be each other's everything. I feel like that's a phrase you hear a lot in movies and TV shows, and it's like, you are my everything. It's like, maybe that's a spectrum. Like, maybe for some people, like, they just have each other and that's fine. But I think as human beings, like, we live in community with each other, and that's broader than the nuclear family. It needs to be broader than the nuclear family. Otherwise, like, if you have a couple and one of the two is going through a really rough patch, it's helpful if that person doesn't only have the romantic
right, like,
partner
who's gonna
to
support
lean on.
That person. Yeah.
Right. So they need other friends that they can talk to. And I guess what I'm getting at is that I saw some folks who came in coupled kind of socially stunted. And that's a chicken and egg thing. Like, is that just kind of how their personality was in general? Or like, was it the relationship holding them back from making other friends? But I also, and maybe you can speak to this because we went to the same school and we don't need to name names, but like, were there folks that you, like, I'm trying to think, it seems like there was somebody who like came in coupled and then broke up and then like was able to actually make friends with other people. Does that sound like a familiar narrative to you, or am I making that up?
Yeah, I'm not honestly remembering specific,
but like the sense of freedom of,
if
like,
the whole point of going to a college where you're going to have a college experience is to like meet people, then it seems like it makes sense to go in, if not single, like knowing that you're there to meet people. Like, I feel like you knew you were there to meet people.
Right.
Like,
right.
I knew you were dating Laura the whole time. Mm-hmm. So now we're friends. You know, like, mm-hmm. It was just, that was always the situation. And it was like, I think, kind of helpful to know that so that we could just like focus on friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And that you knew, like, you knew you were committed and you also wanted to be present. And making friends, and like, you were intentional about that, and that you were spending time on your friends too, like,
right,
you know, that we started a band together, we were like doing this project, and like, it took time and it took a lot of time, and it was okay because you came in knowing that like, you wanted to have experiences in college that were there,
right? And same from Laura's end, you know, developing their own friend group. And and I think maybe it's sort of, I sort of think of it as like biodiversity, because that's where my brain goes. Like, an ecosystem is stronger if you have different species. So if I'm planting a forest, I don't want to just plant pine trees or just plant oak trees or whatever. If I'm planting a forest, I want to plant oak trees and pine trees and beech trees and birch trees and all of these different species, because if a disease comes in and wipes out all the oak trees, then the oak trees, then if your forest is all oak trees, then your forest is done. You're just done. I think same thing with friends and friend groups. Like, if you only have each other and then something happens, then I don't know, you know, heaven forbid one of the persons in the coupled relationship, you know, has a debilitating injury or illness or passes away or something. And then you see this with older folks a lot of the time, where it's like their spouse passes away and they don't have anybody else. I think the metaphor of biodiversity is kind of applies here, where it's like you need a strong network of all kinds of different relationships. And I think that having a long distance relationship allows you to cultivate friend groups independently based on your own interests, mm-hmm. rather than having both of you, even if you're coupled in a college scenario or something like that, that you both have your Venn diagram is a circle when it comes to your friend groups. It's like, I don't know. I think it's great because Laura has their interests and some friends that, you know, I would also consider friends, but Laura is stronger friends with them and does certain activities with them. And I have friends who are musicians and I play music with them. And Laura, you know, is an acquaintance of those people maybe, but isn't like strong friends. And so it allows you to be your own people too. And I think that was part of, I guess, to land the plane, we were in different schools, we were in different states, still wanted to be intentional about being with and for each other, but at the same point, we're able to independently grow and develop in our interests. Like, we didn't both feel like we had to be in choir together, or we didn't both feel like we had to do... yeah, whatever it was, that we could both kind of cultivate our own interests and then kind of bring them back into our relationship as it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think what I was thinking about is communication, of course, related to like when you're going to chat, when you're going to see each other, but also communication about filling each other in about the other parts of your lives. I didn't always do a great job of that when I was in college, to like let Laura know what was going on, what was up. So like doing, I think it's important to do your best to help the other person understand your world that you're in, because I think that can be a point of conflict too. It's like you not feeling like the other person gets you or you're understood, especially when you're under your own pressure of whatever you're trying to do, grad school or residencies or, you know, undergrad coursework or whatever that may be. Yeah, but like respecting each other's time and realizing that, of course, this relationship, this meaning the whatever romantic long distance relationship, is important, of course, and the other relationships that you each have in your respective professional, personal circles is also important. Yeah, and so I think there can be a lot of conflict that can happen over not feeling like one person or another person is giving or getting enough time from the other person, you know, via texting, phone calls, or whatever. So I guess recognizing the fact that you're kind of splitting your attention in a long distance relationship, in any relationship really, but in a long distance relationship, it's like a little harder to wrap your head around the fact that it's like, okay, these are the people in front of me versus a person that I have to like put in front of me,
mm-hmm.
intentionally. That was kind of a meandering thought, but I guess another thing that comes to mind is, and this might not be as relevant for this person that wrote in, as it sounds like their relationship is decently established, but if it's like a really new established relationship, a caution would be in a long distance relationship that if you don't like sort of touch base and actually get to be with each other, I think it could be possible to either overly idealize or, you know, make up stories about the other person, either positive or negative, based on, you know, our memories aren't
reliable.
Very accurate. No. Memories are sort of plastic, like they're malleable, and we kind of shape them to help us tell the story that we want to tell. So that could go either way, but you could certainly make up stories of how somebody is super wonderful and like the best person ever. Or you could make up stories about how this person is, you know, they didn't text me back. Maybe they're seeing somebody else. Like,
right. I guess it seems like you have to be pretty in control of your like mental capacity if you're starting that way, to be like rational about what is happening and like to allocate enough of your energy but not too much to like thinking about the other person.
Yeah. I mean, it's to me, it maybe some people can do it, but for me, it is not a long-term sustainable kind of thing. So I think even having conversations about, okay, what is the trigger, or what is the thing that is like that will allow us to be together, or like what is the step that needs to happen, or at some point it feels like there needs to be a decision about like it needs to be a little bit more intentional than if you're living in the same place and it's like, oh well, you obviously decided to move in together, right, or you know, get engaged or get married or whatever, but it's like it's maybe a little less organic in a long distance situation. You might need to like sit down and have a planning session of like, all right, in 2026, X is going to happen. And that will be a point where we can, where there's like a fork in the road and we have to decide to like either go this way or go this way. And that will be the point where we both have the flexibility, or, you know, thinking about like, is there a gap in a job situation or something like that that allows for relocation, or I don't know, or at least like making steps to, even if you might be comfortable in your current employment situation or whatever, like making steps to like, one of you making steps to like interview for things in either the other person's city or a third city. And then like, okay, well, whoever gets a job first, we'll both move to that city. So there's, I feel like at some point there's going to be a degree of risk, or like, you know, if you feel like it's worth it, there's going to be a little bit of a jumping off a ledge kind of thing and hoping that the net appears,
right,
kind of thing. Which I don't know. I'm thinking about that in other ways, with just like not wanting to work a traditional 9-to-5 and how that transition might look for me personally. And Laura and I are working that out and talking about that, how we can both be like whole people, but yet still be comfortable income wise. But I feel like that situation could feel kind of similar if you both have a, like established career paths or jobs or whatever in separate locales and then figuring out how to make those mesh. It feels like it might be a similar kind of, all right, who can afford to, you know,
to
not
make
work
little changes. Yeah,
not work for a little bit. If we're in the same city, can one person kind of take on the bills for it? I don't know. So it's like those deep emotional conversations, but it's also those super logistic conversations, mm-hmm. logistical conversations of like, all right, well, we have to, there are better times and worse times, but there's probably not going to be a perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just going to wait.
Right.
You know. That feels like a non-answer.
I mean, like, we don't know this person.
Yeah, that's true.
So, hopefully any discussion will be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Andrew, thank you for agreeing to be on this podcast.
Sure thing.
And
yeah.
Sharing your experiences and your music.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to chat.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to hang out in your house. And if people want to find your music on the internet, where should they go?
They can go to any of the, you know, big evil streaming platforms. Not all completely evil, but you know, the Spotify's, the Apple Music's, the Bandcamp's, the SoundCloud's, the all of that. If you just look for Andrew Pauls, Pauls, on any of those things, you should be able to find me. And Instagram handle is at Andrew Pauls Music. Same with Facebook.
Do you happen to have a mailing list? Are you trying to get people to sign up for your mailing
list? Yeah, I am. Yeah. So if you go to my website, there should be a nice pop-up there that asks you for your email, which the email, same as the handle, it's andrewpaulsmusic.com. So.
Cool. Sweet. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dear Balladeer podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, or you have enjoyed it in the past, it would be super awesome if you could rate and subscribe it on whatever platform you like listening to your podcasts. And also, if you just want to tell a friend about it, that is a great way for this podcast to be out in the world. I'm not going out of my way really to try to get people to hear this podcast, but I do enjoy making it and I do enjoy it when people listen to it. So if you like it, let someone know. Thanks so much, and we'll be back next month for another Dear Balladeer.